Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to this week's Fallon Forum, folks. This is Ed Fallon, your host, broadcasting as we always do from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa. And this content of this show is going to be relevant to you wherever you live. Stay tuned for that. Hey, underwriting provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Our bumper music, provided by Des Moines Irish Session. All right, flock. I'm not talking about birds, I'm talking about cameras. So 2 months ago, I admitted not many of us had ever heard of flock safety. I think I first heard about it maybe 4 months ago. But flock has this vast network of surveillance cameras, over 100,000 cameras all over the country. And I'm guessing most of you have probably heard of Flock by now. It's been getting a lot of news lately. It's a company based in Atlanta, Georgia. And before I talk about who is behind the company, I want to share this investigative story I've come across. It's the best one I've seen so far. And interestingly, surprisingly really, it's from Atlanta. It's from Atlanta News First. This is the only locally owned TV station in Atlanta. Formerly with CBS, and as far as I'm concerned, anybody abandoning CBS to go independent, that's a good thing, right? So here's the report on one man, a guy named Bob Sklar, his effort to fight the proliferation of flock cameras in North Manchester, Indiana. That's a little town of about 5,000 people. And there are 18 cameras in between North Manchester and Wabash County, which is the county where North Manchester is situated. There are 18 of these cameras, and here's the story.
There's your guy right there.
Bob Sklar believes the government is following him.
It's as if the government was tracking you, put a GPS on you, monitored everywhere you went, when you went there.
Not just around this small Indiana town, but across the country.
This is where the camera is.
Amid the rows of corn, license plate reader cameras are cropping up, connected to the nationwide flock safety network.
Did you start to see the police in your rearview mirror more than you would expect?
Only one officer.
How are you?
I would come into town and all of a sudden he would be there, like he was waiting for me. It started to be more than a coincidence. It just happened. It kept happening more and more. I didn't understand why or how he knew. And then that's when I learned about the flock cameras.
Okay, and here's his conversation with that officer.
Why are you out here patrolling in the county? Huh?
I don't know.
Or did you just come out looking for me?
No.
Is there any reason they would be legitimately tracking you?
Not that I'm aware of.
So how much is the budget going up?
Bob regularly criticizes the North Manchester government and its police officers.
You speak out at town council meetings.
I do.
Whether or not this is appropriate conduct for a town employee.
They've adopted official rules just because of me.
Believing the police are following him.
He follows me out of town. He follows me around town.
He started following them.
You can keep driving, bud.
I'm legally parked.
I have seen them on questionable traffic stops and recorded it.
Please exit the emergency incident area. Otherwise, you will go to jail.
Is it fair to characterize you, to use the legal term of art, that you're the town pain in the ass as far as the local government's concerned?
I'm definitely one of them.
Park there?
Do something about it. Leave me alone. Stop harassing me. Why do you keep harassing me?
I'm just trying to see if this is...
Why do you keep harassing me? Leave me alone.
Right about a mile outside of town is where this other camera is.
Bob passed by a Flock camera and wondered, is that how the police knew where he was?
Did you file a records request for the audit logs to see if they were tracking you?
Yep.
What happened?
They did have an alert on my vehicle. They didn't say what time period or anything like that, and then refused to identify the officer, claiming officer safety.
He found the answer online.
Haveibeenflocked.com. Put in your license plate number and you can see if there are inquiries on your license plate. And for mine, the search count is 63. I put my license plate number in and all these hits came up. That's scary. That is way scary. I was shocked, emotionally distraught, when I saw the level of surveillance that that data revealed. Minimum number of devices was 11,235, maximum 98,000. Almost 100,000 devices around the country.
When an officer accesses the Flock database, all the external departments searched nationwide keep their own logs of that search. That's how we were able to confirm dozens of searches of Bob's tag. Public records from out-of-state departments show multiple North Manchester officers and Wabash County Sheriff's deputies searched Bob's license plate again and again for at least a year.
Flock requires they put in a reason for each search. What was their reason for searching you?
One reason, my name, just Sklar. You know, a lot of them were just locate, 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 locate.
Locate isn't a crime.
Nope.
And here again, I'm going to cut out. This is, again, the officer that Sklar claims has been tracking him, the conversation.
I have multiple inquiries under your name for my vehicle.
You're going to have to talk to somebody else about that. Don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what Flock is?
No, I know what Flock is. I don't know what you mean by using it to track you.
Really?
He's following my travel history all over the country. That's none of his business.
If Bob did decide to move away from this tiny Indiana town and its three Flock cameras, the North Manchester Police Department could still track his movements nationwide because it's connected to more than 6,000 agencies in 49 states with tens of thousands of cameras.
I remember having a conversation with this officer one time, and he said, so how was your trip to Philly? And I was like, how would you know that I was in Philly? That scares the hell out of me.
Neither the officer nor his chief agreed to interviews or to share their side of the story. It's perfectly legal in Indiana and most states for officers to search the Flock database without suspicion of any crime.
Nationwide, there's a growing pattern of officers misusing license plate readers that are meant to protect the public.
They knowingly use these systems for personal reasons.
But we are tracking more than 70 cases across the country.
Unauthorized use of a Flock camera.
The number of officers arrested for misusing these cameras is mounting here.
Officers under investigation, disciplined, fired, or arrested for allegedly misusing Flock.
Officers have used them to stalk or harass exes.
Including searches on personal acquaintances and family members.
If they can do that to them, they can do it to anybody, can't they?
Absolutely. And that's the scary part.
And now we're going to hear from the Flock representative about how wonderful Flock cameras are.
Now there's things we can do, and we can, you know, put some new guardrails, parameter, whatever it is. Let's have that debate. But let's not say this technology isn't helpful, because it clearly is.
Flock says its technology is catching bad guys with or without a badge, while the company openly invites new regulations.
And there's some part of it that the city doesn't like. They should just regulate that stuff, outlaw it, make rules about it, change it. And we're happy to oblige by those things.
Nobody in Indiana is releasing their records voluntarily, as far as I know. So the only reason we know about this is because these three departments had metadata showing that he made that search.
That's where HaveIBeenFlocked.com gets most of its data. Network audit logs showing external agency searches of a department's cameras. Flock recently changed those logs to withhold the names of police officers and tags searched, saying officers asked for their names to be kept out of public records.
Police officers can track you with no warrant, no reasonable suspicion, no probable cause, but you can't track them tracking you. You can't find out who's tracking you.
That's scary. That's where we have a secret police state now.
Bob Sklar now takes the long way home.
A little out of the way, but it avoids triggering the camera.
Do you feel safer because of Flock in your town?
No, because I've seen the abuse. That doesn't make me feel safe at all. It actually makes me scared.
Bob is trying to put all of this in his rearview mirror, but says he still sees officers behind him.
There's nowhere to hide.
Okay, well, it would be easy to dismiss Bob Sklar as some kind of a crazy paranoid guy, right? But I don't think that's the case. You know, and again, these cameras, there's over 100,000 of them nationwide. And some of them were deployed back as early as 2017. The concern that Sklar references is that the government is tracking him. Okay, well, what about the corporate connection? I mean, Flock Safety is valued at about $8.4 billion. The venture capital funding for Flock came from Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz. Now, who are these guys? Well, Andreessen and Horowitz both personally donated $2.5 million to one of Trump's super PACs, the Right for America PAC. That was leading up to the 2024 election. And then later, after the election, they contributed millions more to a couple of Trump's, Trump-aligned political action committees. So Flock's system is absolutely being used by ICE, by Trump, and his chief henchman, Stephen Miller, as part of the whole administration's immigration and deportation crackdown. So there's that. There's also the privacy concerns that we heard about. The Iowa ACLU is calling the cameras Big Brother-style government surveillance. The National ACLU has started what's called the Get the Flock Out, very cute, campaign. Get the Flock Out campaign is calling for cities and police departments to end their contracts with Flock. There are other forms of backlash, too, beyond just trying to go the political route and getting your city council or your county board of supervisors to end contracts with this company. Just here in central Iowa, and again, we're not known for property damage here, but one Flock camera in the suburb of Pleasant Hill was sawed down. Three have been vandalized in another suburb, Johnston. Four were vandalized in Ankeny. So the one in Pleasant Hill, it was cut in half and then the system itself destroyed. And according to the city manager's office, I believe, the cost to replace the camera is about $7,000, and the damage was caused back in July, and so far no camera has replaced it. So I'm not condoning that. I got to admit it's pretty effective, right? But it's more effective to get cities and counties to remove the cameras. And again, it's not just a privacy thing. It's not just about ICE using these cameras in their deportation and immigration efforts. Nearly 80% of Americans polled recently oppose government surveillance. They oppose handling personal information by public agencies and implicitly by corporations that help control the equipment. As the video mentioned, there are about 50 cases right now of law enforcement officers who have been accused or charged with the misuse of Flock cameras, tracking down ex-girlfriends, spying on love interests, that sort of thing. Just as bad as that, Flock's surveillance network was used by, I can't remember which government entity used it, but it was used to track a woman who had traveled in order to self-manage an abortion in a state that now has outlawed abortion. Of course, it's been used by ICE, and it's also been used in a way that searches by race. So, again, this stuff is pretty bad. And again, it's not just in Iowa that we're seeing these kinds of vigilante-type pushback against it. In Tennessee, the cameras have been shot at. In California, one was hit by a truck. In Virginia, one was beaten with a baseball bat. In Texas, another one was cut down. One in New York was splattered with paint. And there's a guy in Florida named Carl Gunn. He's 77. He calls himself the Flock Blocker. He sits in a chair next to a post that has a camera on it. He holds a 10-foot-long pole blocking the camera. And the sign on his blocker thing reads, "Down with Flock Cameras." He's a registered Republican. So, ah, good. Okay. Florida man. That's the good kind of Florida man. Tyler Knight, another Florida man, has been sharing social media posts of what guns been up to. And he says that the criminals will always find a way to commit crimes, whether cameras are present or not. And I'll quote him, "You're not building a database on a bunch of innocent civilians. I don't want my data harvested and sold off to insurance companies, foreign countries, and let them do whatever they want with it." So, here's a third Florida man. This is a Miami guy named Thomas Kennedy. He said, "These cameras just symbolize sort of the zeitgeist of the moment. The cameras are reflective of the AI infrastructure that's being deployed, like the data centers." And we all know how data centers have become a huge issue in the midterm election, locally and nationally. And I think what Kennedy is onto there is that these cameras, these 100,000 plus cameras across the country, are connected to that and also becoming an issue. I mean, I think we're going to be hearing more and more questions to candidates about flock cameras. And I think it's going to be a bipartisan concern. We'll see. Hey, I got to take a short break. Back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. For more information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Again, Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Coming at you from Des Moines, Iowa, the heart of America's heartland. Underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. My guest for this segment of the program, Dave Bouchaw. He is a congressional candidate running in Northeast Iowa. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ed. I appreciate you.
So you are running as an independent candidate.
Yes.
There is a Democratic candidate.
Yes.
A Republican candidate. It's a very competitive district.
There's a Libertarian candidate as well.
Right, and we've had the Libertarian candidate on this program, Rick Stewart. And per requirements by the FCC, we have invited all four candidates. The Democratic and Republican candidate have yet to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for getting back to me. Thank you for your interest. Why the heck are you doing this?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel that as a working class poor person that's grown up my entire life, not seeing any real deliverable or measurable gains from either party for the coming down for the working class, I feel like it's my responsibility to work to build a movement to break out of the two-party system. I feel like both parties are entirely captured by the same corporate oligarchs, the same tech corporations, and the same foreign agents. 60% of Americans want a third party on the ballot. 40% of Americans already identify as independents. And here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, independents are the plurality.
There are more independents than Republicans or Democrats.
That's correct, yeah. Yes.
So, I'm guessing Democrats are third.
Democrats are third. There's about 154,000 Democrats, and there's 198,000 independents.
Okay. And then
and the Republicans are around 175,000, 180,000.
In the middle there. Okay.
In the middle.
And what is your working class background?
Well, I grew up patches on patches poor. Both my parents worked at the welding and fabrication factory in our hometown.
Which town?
West Union, Iowa. That's where I was born and raised, in Fayette County, up in northeast Iowa. But that factory shut down, so my mom picked up a couple jobs working at the nursing home and at the gas station to make ends meet. My dad got a job wherever he could. We worked hard our whole life, but we were never politically inclined. My parents didn't vote. I thought growing up my entire life that government and politics was the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I thought that was the job of government, was to fight wars. And then I got older and realized...
You're partially right on that.
I suppose I am.
Whether it should be or should not be, it seems to be our business.
That's right.
Fighting wars.
Yeah, we make a lot of
ongoing
money.
Ongoing wars,
it.
Yeah.
And
we don't make a lot of money off it, but the corporations that pay for the weapons do.
Oh, yeah. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, all of them.
They build the weapons.
They build the weapons and they make the money.
So anyway, I digress. Sorry, you were going on with your background there.
Yeah. So I grew up working class poor. We fought hard our whole life. And then I realized as I started getting older that all of the things that we struggled with as I was growing up were a direct causation of decisions by elected officials in government. I got pretty deep into the punk music scene when I was younger. I was very angry, very angsty, until I discovered folk labor music. Utah Phillips, Pete Seeger, Sister Ann Feeney, Rest in Power. And they showed me that they were also kind of punk, but they organized community power. They were organizing the working class. And so I joined the union at 17. And
which union?
IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, Local 650.
Okay.
Old industrial union.
AKA the Wobblies?
The Wobblies, that's right. So I traveled around as a roving delegate, preaching the Wobbly gospel and playing on the strike lines when I was younger.
Yeah. And is that going to open you up to attacks of being a communist?
I think that just me having long hair and wearing a red headband opens up the idea of communism attacks to me.
Really? I thought it opened up the line of attack of Rockstar.
Rockstar, Axl Rose, whatever. I get all kinds of stuff. John Lennon to Tom Petty to whatever. But
stick with Axl Rose, I guess.
I guess I'll stick with Axl Rose, yeah. But and I'm partial to Tom Petty, of course.
I love Tom Petty.
I do, too. Yeah. I really do. And but you know, people have these labels, communist, socialist, fascist. I think that it's 21st century laziness that we try to apply all these old antiquated terms to politics. We're in a new age of politics. We shouldn't be transposing these old terms into modern society, because what do they really mean anyways? And if you overuse them, they lose their utilization.
I agree. You can overuse them. I think right now the use of the communist label by certain Republican operatives is pretty absurd.
And the use of overuse of fascism by the liberals is pretty absurd.
Do you think Trump is a fascist?
I don't. I don't think that Trump is a fascist. I think that
Do we have any fascists in the world right now in positions of power, leadership?
You know, I would say that there are some fascistic tendencies that we see in Benjamin Netanyahu, also in Javier Milei. And also the guy that's in charge down there in Argentina, right? Or not Argentina. Where do they have that big Supermax prison at? Where's that at?
El Salvador.
Yeah, I would say that they have more fascistic tendencies. I don't think that I'd call Trump a fascist, and I might get beat up for that. But I think it's lazy liberalism that calls him a fascist. He is something different. And if we want to truly diagnose what it is that Trump is capturing and speaking to in America, we have to do more than just apply an antiquated diagnosis.
So what is he speaking to in America?
He's speaking to an anger and a frustration and a desperation. I mean, if you look back at 2016, President Trump and Bernie Sanders, if you put two of their campaign ads next to each other, it was essentially the same thing. They're speaking to a desperation of the working class.
Similar, but not the same, I would say.
Very similar.
You probably know people, too, who were Sanders supporters who would not support Hillary Clinton after the primary was over, and they ended up with Donald Trump.
Yes, and Sanders supporters that went to Donald Trump. I wager if we're all struggling and drowning in the ocean, in that moment of desperation, we're going to A lot of folks will push their neighbor's head under the water just to get up for another gasp of air. And I think that's what we're seeing.
It's a horrible metaphor.
It is a horrible metaphor, but it's where we're at, brother. You know, we have to realize the reality. Everybody's drowning. The whole working class is drowning. And they want something different. And there's President Biden, who said nothing will fundamentally change. There's Hillary Clinton, who's the queen of the establishment. And then you had Donald Trump, who was rough around the edges like your drunk uncle at a Christmas. People like him once in a while, but I think people are getting a little bit sick and tired of that and seeing no consequential deliverables for the working class.
So people are sick and tired of Trump.
I think that they're getting there. And yeah.
He's not a fascist. Is he an authoritarian?
I would say he's an authoritarian. I think that a lot of American presidents have been authoritarian.
All of them? Which ones haven't? Put it that way.
Which ones have not been authoritarian? None in my recent memory. I would say everyone in my recent memory has been pretty authoritarian.
But does Trump steal the cake in terms of the depth of authoritarianism?
You know, that's, I think that's to be seen still. I don't know if I would say that he, I think that we often attribute a lot of the mechanisms of American politics to Donald Trump these days. You know, he's been in the limelight for the last 10 years at least. For a lot of young folks in their 20s and 30s, their entire political life has been Donald Trump. And what I've done on my campaign is I don't really talk about Donald Trump, and I don't talk about Joe Biden, and I don't talk about these folks from the past because I feel like they get scapegoated a lot and everything applied to
them. Except when some pesky talk show host brings it up, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think this is maybe the first time I've said Donald Trump on this campaign. So
really?
Thanks,
oh,
Ed.
Well, you're welcome. Happy to help.
Yeah, no problem.
So you're an independent.
Yes.
So I can't point to your party's platform and say, aha, what is your platform?
Yeah, so my platform is I focus on common denominator issues that affect the entirety of the working class. I don't get into this factionalized and ideological posturing. You know, what folks want is good jobs, clean water, clean air, an environment that they can count on, a house that they know isn't going to get ripped out from under them by a private equity firm. 70% of Iowans support strong labor unions. I am a labor unionist. So a lot of my policies are focused on common denominator or class reductionist issues. You know, it could. I'm a big fan of more direct democracy as well. I feel like representative democracy in a lot of avenues has outlived its usefulness.
So how would direct democracy work?
National ballot initiatives is something that I'm a big proponent of. In 22 states in this country, if you want an issue on the ballot, you collect enough signatures in your state. And you can vote on it the same as you vote on representatives.
So when you say national ballot initiatives, you don't mean an initiative affecting the entire country, or
yes.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
But also allowing that to occur at the state level as well.
That's correct. Maintain it at the state level if there's state level initiatives. But I would like it if we collect enough signatures or whatever the parameters are in every one of the states. When you go to vote for president or senator or U.S. congressperson, you're also voting on, should we legalize marijuana? Should we have term limits? Should we ban corporations from financing campaigns? I trust my neighbors and I trust Americans enough to make the right decision.
On those issues, should we ban corporations from funding campaigns?
Absolutely. A corporation's not a person.
Mitt Romney said it was.
Oh, Mitt Romney says a lot of things that are wrong, and I don't agree with Mitt Romney.
I did agree with Mitt Romney when he called capitalism, our current version of capitalism, crony capitalism.
I would probably agree with that as well. I would agree with him on that one.
Yeah.
That it's crony capitalism. And, you know, there's some people that embrace capitalism. There's some people that embrace socialism. I embrace the working class, and that's where my loyalty lies. It doesn't lie with this definition or that definition. I feel like it gets into a convoluted conversation, and it pits workers against each other, which is exactly what the two-party system wants.
And you mentioned clean water and clean air. What initiatives would you support to accomplish those goals?
As for clean water, what I would do is I would work towards a declaration as a national emergency on our water quality in the United States. And I would advocate for legislation that would create a federal jobs guarantee, creating the infrastructure to clean our water in the United States.
The infrastructure to clean our water.
Yes.
And I mean, well, take Iowa, for example. Again,
yep.
this program broadcasts all over the country, but we're dealing with similar problems that other people have to deal with. Maybe a little bit more acute, in fact. We have a huge nitrate problem.
Yes, we do.
In fact, because of that, Des Moines has the largest and most expensive nitrate removal system in the world.
It does.
How are we going to address that without some kind of regulations that go beyond voluntary compliance?
Sure. And I think that we do need heavier regulations. The same as what labor unions and environmentalists fought for in the past when the Chicago River was on fire. One of the biggest...
Chicago River or the Cuyahoga River?
Was the Cuyahoga River is what it was, and the Cuyahoga was on
fire. The Chicago
fire.
River was turned green, but that was intentional on St. Patrick's Day. Right?
And they still do it, yeah.
But it's terrible, but anyway.
The Cuyahoga, when that was on fire, you had labor unions, especially the UAW, if I'm not mistaken, the UAW was one of the biggest contributors to the establishment of Earth Day and initiatives to clean up and advocate for cleaner waters and industrial accountability. Mm-hmm. I think that there's two things we need to do. There's the long term, then there's the short term. Right now, there's a hole in the ship. That is our nitrate problem, our PFAS, PFOS, forever chemicals, microplastics, lead in our water right now. We have the technology. We have the knowledge to create infrastructure and mechanisms that can clean our water. We should be investing in doing that right now, as well as exploring regulatory measures on these corporations. But we got to plug the boat.
And we also have a very, very powerful corporate, you know, set of interests that don't want to see any changes.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a tough hurdle to overcome.
It is, and that's why I think that we need to keep focused on these single issue kind of common denominators with workers. You're not going to see me out here saying Green New Deal this or that. That's the same thing as fascism, socialism, communism. It's a talking point. What are the real tangible gains that you're trying to accomplish? I think that when you reduce it down to that, most Americans agree. We want clean water. Mm-hmm. How do we get there? We work from that point.
It's not just clean water. It's not just the water quality. It's also water quantity.
Yes.
And we have a huge problem out west right now with the Colorado River, you know, drier than it ever has been. Lake Mead, lower than it ever has been. Mm-hmm. Conversations about pumping water from the Great Lakes down to the Southwest, which I think is insane.
Yes.
And I speak as, no, I'm not, a, we're not a great state, a Great Lakes state here in Iowa, mm-hmm. but that is just insane.
It is agree? Insane. I would definitely agree. Yeah. And there's fears that we're going to be entering water wars. I mean, they're doing speculative bets on water futures right now. That's something that people...
What are those gambling platforms?
Oh, gambling platforms. People that make a whole lot of money more than we do, Ed, are they're speculating.
That'd be
on,
most people.
Most people would make more than us, yeah. Most people in general don't make that much. It's a very small handful, right. A small concentration of people at the top.
So one more policy question, and we're going to talk politics in the next segment.
Yeah.
One more policy question. If you're in Congress, you're going to have to deal with national security and foreign relations.
Yes.
And how do you feel about what some of us are calling the forever wars that we seem to be engaged in?
I think we have enough wars to win here at home, and we should be focused on those wars rather than endless conquest abroad. I think that we need to stop sending funding to Israel. We need to end propping up this failed war in Ukraine that is costing thousands, tens of thousands of young Ukrainian men's lives. And just, you know, my biggest fear is, 20 years from now, the unexploded cluster bombs that are going to be laying in those fields in Ukraine that kids are going to step on. Mm-hmm. No more forever wars. Pull the money back. Focus on securing our borders and domestic security and fighting the wars at home.
Okay. Hey, we got to take a short break. Folks, my guest today is Dave Bouchard. He's a congressional candidate, independent candidate for the 2nd District of Iowa. That's up the northeast part of our state. Back in a minute, we're going to talk politics when we come back on the Fallon Forum. Again, underwriting provided by Western Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers, formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit CircleOfPeacemakers.com. At Westrum Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrum and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Western Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Again, Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Underwriting provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. My guest today, Dave Bouchard. He's, again, a congressional candidate, independent candidate for the 2nd Congressional District in Northeast Iowa. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ed.
We've talked policy. Not for the hard stuff.
All right.
Politics.
Okay.
What are you thinking running as an independent in a seat that might tilt the balance of the U.S. House at a time when Donald Trump is becoming more and more unpopular? That's not my opinion, folks. That's an opinion that a lot of people have. Right now, there's a sense that, you know, Donald Trump is out of control, whether you call him an authoritarian or a fascist or an oligarch, and he's consolidating power. And the more he does that, the less and less our democracy is going to be able to thrive. Mm-hmm. More and more it's under attack. And so people are saying, well, we need to either have Republicans who are independent, like Thomas Massey was, mm-hmm. or Democrats who are going to provide a wall against Trump's march toward authoritarianism. How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
Sure. So what I'll start off with is I am not, as an independent and as someone that has seen no deliverable gains for the working class from either party, no matter who's in power, over my entire lifetime, and I'm 31 years old. I'm still a young guy, but it's just been failure after failure. I'm not entirely concerned about who's going to maintain power. I'm not concerned about this king of the hill mentality of what can we do to maintain the institutional levels of control. I am looking at the opportunity that's facing us right now. Some political educators and political scientists will say that we are entering our seventh party structure. There's an opening.
Seventh party structure.
So we've had different
never
structures.
Heard this.
We've had different iterations of parties that are in control in the past.
Okay. And so we're entering. The Whigs at one time.
No, the Whigs at one time. You know, the Greenbacks had their little bit of a rise and stuff over
the Populist Party.
The Populist Party, the Bull Moose Party. And we're entering into a new opportunity. And what I'm looking at is not so much can we have Democrats or Republicans win control, because that's never delivered anything consequential for us. What can we do as independents, which are the plurality here, what can we do to take advantage of this opportunity to build a real populist movement that isn't going to just be crushed from within these two parties?
And a lot of people who agree with you would say, yeah, normally that makes sense, but this election is different because of the consequences.
Oh, it's always the most important election of our lifetime, every single time. You know, the last election of our lifetime was the most important. We had President Biden who said nothing will fundamentally change, and what did he do when he got in there? He started working to actively fund and facilitate a genocide. He stopped a railroad strike, which was the biggest betrayal of workers in modern American history by the Democratic Party. Just a list of the litany of betrayals. And let me just say, when they stopped that railroad strike, you look at states like Pennsylvania, right? Pennsylvania, one of the strongest union states in this country. Every Democrat in Pennsylvania voted to stop the railroad strike. The only one that didn't was the Republican Senator Toomey, for goodness sake. We don't see anything gained from either party. So I'm not concerned about helping that party or that party maintain power. I want to say, what can we do to get 3, 4, 5 independents in there to break the opportunity of any kind of majority from either party and focus back on the real issues people want? Stop the omnibus spending bills, the giant bills where they hide different earmarks in it. Force votes on universal health care as an American guarantee. Force votes on term limits.
So you would support a universal health care system?
Absolutely. I believe that's okay. My most fiscally conservative policy is universal health care.
Well, we definitely pay a lot more in this country for less care than you would get in other countries that have some version of universal care.
And you'd think that we have the best health care in the world because of that, right, Ed?
We have great system. We have great care if you can access it and
if
pay for it.
If you can access it. And we still rank 14th in quality and dead last in health care outcomes, and we have a lower life expectancy than most other developed nations. Ed, that's not freedom, it's failure.
That's back to policy, too, and that's an important one that we missed the first segment. But you're running as an independent.
Yes.
So you're not on a party ticket.
No.
And is that you're talking about the need for a third party, for a party to replace the Democrats and Republicans, but you're not running as a party person?
No.
Why not?
Well, I believe that we need to build trust with people first. And I do want to say I'm the first no-party candidate to qualify for the ballot in Northeast Iowa in modern history. There's been an independent party. There's been libertarians. Very, very rarely in Iowa politics is there a no-party candidate. We've built all of this infrastructure from the ground up, and I can't say that we know enough about what the populist sentiment in America is to say we're going to be this new party or that new party. Mm-hmm. You see the DSA trying to do their thing. You see Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor and Thomas Massie doing their thing about forming a third party. I believe first, before anything, we need to build trust. And I think that is by going to where people are at, and that is independent. Once we build that trust and that infrastructure, we can have a conversation about what does a party look like. So, do we want a party?
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, there was a time when there were no political parties in the U.S., but that was a very short period of time at the very beginning of the country's history.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, how closely do your priorities line up with the Libertarian Party?
In some senses, they do. Libertarian Party was definitely ahead of the ball on a number of issues like legalized marijuana, gay marriage. You know, they were for gay marriage for decades. I think the prominent members of the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton didn't come out in favor of gay marriage till 2014.
I got a primary opponent back in 1996 because I supported marriage equality.
Really?
Yeah, see, a Democratic primary opponent, because Democrats were so opposed to that.
So I think that libertarians, you know, we align on some things, yeah. But, you know, call me crazy, but I think that we still need national road systems. We need.
What does that mean?
We need roads that are maintained beyond just localized community. We need some kind of federal infrastructure to maintain our roads and bridges and stuff.
How about a national train system?
I would love a national train system. Okay. I would rather be focusing on a national train system than this heavy investment into the tech and AI and data center infrastructure. I know the unions want the jobs. Well, unions should be a little bit stronger in what the American people want.
Okay, so you are independent, but my understanding is the Forward Party has endorsed you.
Yes, they have.
So you do have you do have some partisan backing from a third party.
I do. I do have some partisan backing from the Forward Party. The thing about the Forward Party, though, is they don't have any kind of dogmatic policy platform that they stick to. They believe that the candidates that they endorse or the candidates that run as Forward Party should shape their policy and priorities in accordance to what their local economy and constituents' desires and interests are. So they don't have any kind of overarching national policy. Theirs is run and support the community that you live in.
Hmm. Is it hard to build a party with a platform that's almost a non-platform that's so broad?
I would imagine that it is, and they're still in their infancy, so mm-hmm. I'm guessing that that'll become more concreted as they build power. But I think they've made the right decision in not locking themselves into one ideology or another. I think that's been to the detriment of folks like the Tea Party, for example. You know, they were locked in their dogmatic priorities, and then they ended up just being consumed by the Republican Party. Did they make some gains in Congress? Sure they did, but they have no real independent power beyond obstruction at this point. Mm. And I'm not looking for obstruction. I'm looking to build working class power.
And do you think the Forward Party is the best vehicle forward to accomplish that?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it's the best vehicle. I am not a forwardist. I'm not a, you know, but I'm open to the idea of collaboration with some of these insurgent parties, you know, whether it's a Forward Party or, you know, I'll be honest, this thing that Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie are building, let me be very clear. If they're building some kind of party infrastructure that is hyper-focused on the common denominator of taking on the ruling elite class, the Epstein class, and they're working towards true deliverable gains for the working class, I'm open to a conversation, dialogue, and potential collaboration with that.
Some would say that given Tucker Carlson's perspective on many issues and Marjorie Taylor Greene's, you know, past statement, even though they've broken with President Trump, mm-hmm. that their perspective would not suggest that it's going to be a, you know, whatever political party they might come up with would be really friendly to the average person.
Then they're going to have to make that decision. If they want to be a successful party, they need to be a populist party that answers these real sentiments and needs.
Isn't there an element within the Democratic Party that is becoming more populist?
In some places, like New York, where they've had decades and decades to do trial and error and then finally win a socialist, for example, sure, you could say, you know, it's a safe, relatively Democrat area. Even the Republicans are fairly progressive Republicans over there. They've had decades of practice. Out here, you know, what happened in New York would not translate well to Iowa.
Well, what about Michigan? Yeah, with I'll say winning the Democratic primary there, or even Francesca Hong losing the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin by a very, very small, I think 4,000 votes.
I think in the elevated emotion that we're in right now when it comes to the genocide in Israel, when you've got a candidate like Haley Stevens who says, Israel comes to me in my dreams, I would say it's pretty, you know, most Americans don't want us to be over there right now. They don't want us to be funding a genocide. Mm-hmm. I would think if you're up against a candidate like that, it's a shoo-in that you're going to either get close or defeat them.
So the Republican Party of Iowa, with help from the National GOP and with help from Robert Kennedy Jr., pushed the Libertarian candidates to try to drop out of the first, second, third congressional races and the governor's race. Mm-hmm. And the only place they didn't succeed was with your district, with Rick Stewart is still in the race. But is it possible that there may be efforts or already have been efforts by either the Democratic or Republican candidates to push you out of the race?
You know what? Yeah, there has been. And you're about to break a story right here, Ed. My Democratic.
Well, lucky me.
Lucky you. I've thought about when I'd go public with this, but here we go. Democratic candidate Lindsey James. Early in this race, she was speaking to some, you know, I've been in the political world for a long time, and she had spoken to a couple folks that I know in the political world, and she had asked what can be done to get Dave to stop all of this.
Meaning not run?
Not run, exactly. She calls me a gotcha candidate. Maybe because I have policy and she's got platitudes, but and another time when I was iced out of the Luther College Forum, which I was invited to, and then some folks threw a fit internally and got me kicked out of it just 48 hours beforehand. I went to that forum still and I participated and I listened to the Democratic candidates that were on the stage. Afterwards, Lindsey James came up to me and she said, "You know, once I get into Congress, I'm going to need folks like you on my team up there in my office." She said, "I plan on getting on the House Committee on Agriculture, and I need folks that know that work on the ground." So there's already been kind of ad hoc efforts to persuade me to leave the race in exchange for political favors. That's the kind of disgusting actions that I'm fighting against.
And can you prove that?
I didn't have a recording on. No, it's just what I say.
Yeah. And again, Rick Stewart had the same situation.
Yes, he did.
He had RFK Jr. offer him basically a position with the Trump administration.
Yes,
if he would drop out. The same thing happened to me when I ran for Congress back in 2008 against Leonard Boswell. He offered me a job if I would get out of the race.
Yeah.
So I know it happens.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
And it's his. And just like with you, that was my word against his. And I can absolutely assure you, 100%, that's what he told me. That wasn't him directly. It was one of his surrogates.
Sure, sure.
In this case, it was the actual candidate.
It was the actual candidate. Ouch. It was actually Lindsey James.
Sloppy.
It is very sloppy. You know, and it's. I want to affirm that my only loyalty lies with the working class. And I, you know, that's without compromise.
Hmm. Well, I guess one other question that always comes up, more often than it should really, is how much money have you raised?
Around $30,000,
okay.
Which I know that some people say, "Oh, that's not a lot." Well, let me throw this at you here. The Democrat and Republicans, when they were running in their primary, they had the entire political party infrastructure behind them, which means that they had county parties in all 22 counties across this 13,000 square mile district that were harvesting signatures for them. They had all the money in the world, both state and national money, and they spent $1.4 million combined to get on the ballot, Joe Mitchell and Lindsey James. We spent a couple thousand dollars and we built all of our infrastructure from the ground on up. Everything was against us.
How many signatures did you need?
We needed to get 1,700 signatures across 11 counties. We got over 2,200 signatures or 2,300 signatures in all 22 counties, over 200% in every county.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us, Dave. Folks, Dave Bouchard has been my guest today. He's a congressional candidate up in Northeast Iowa. And again, as the FCC requires, and I think this is actually a good requirement, I've invited the other candidates on as well. Rick Stewart has been on this program, but I have not heard back from either Lindsey James or Joe Mitchell. So anyway,
best of luck. I've been there and done that. Running for Congress is not easy.
No, it's not.
Occasionally it's fun. Oftentimes it's not.
But, and I won't be done after this. My vow is that there will be an independent on the ballot in 2028 in every district. We're building a movement.
All right. Well, good luck. Hey, back in a minute, folks. Kathy Burns will join me. We're going to be talking about local food stuff, of course. Underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Hey, good to have you back with us, folks, on the Fallon Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hello, Kathy. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
And, we've been wrestling with a very bizarre situation here in Des Moines where all of a sudden it seems like it might be illegal to grow food on the what we call the parking strip, the border area, that strip of grass between the sidewalk and the street. This has come about in a very interesting way.
Yes, we became aware of a woman in a nearby neighborhood who was issued a citation from a city official for having a couple of very small planter boxes and foods growing in those planter boxes on her property. And they were not obstructing view of a corner or intersection.
Yeah, in the middle
like
of the
that.
Block, I think, right?
It was in the middle of the block. Yeah. And when we got to know her a little bit, we realized that she had gone through the city code to determine if, when she put these in, if it was legal, allowed. And she didn't find anything in the city code, and the city code is hard to comb through, but she found a website called Feed DSM, DSM code for city, for the city of Des Moines. And Ed and I have history with that website, but it said on that city-managed website, you can even grow food in the parking strip. So she did, and then she got issued a citation saying she had to remove it.
Yeah, and apparently, I mean, it has been, there's no prohibition in the code against growing food in that parking strip. But apparently, the city engineer decided that that it's hazardous to grow food in the parking strip because somebody could trip on a tomato, I guess, or...
Or get poisoned or by picking up a piece of food.
Eat a piece of fruit from your, or bean, or who knows what, from your parking strip and then get poisoned. Or that the food itself could get poisoned by stuff kicking off the street.
Street chemicals and salt and stuff.
You know, I would rather take my chances on eating food that I grew in front of my own home than eating a bag of Taylor Farms lettuce.
The history of it is that prior to July of 2025, there was no specific area of the code that said that growing food in the parking strip was not allowed. On July 30th, I think, of 2025, City Council was presented with an ordinance that had been being worked on for some time.
By staff, right. By
city engineering and other staff. And engineering was asked to make some changes that actually allowed in what they call the right-of-way, the public right-of-way. And when city council members got this ordinance to approve or not approve, there was a lot of, ordinances are hard to read. There was a lot of language that was crossed out, new language added. And the interesting part of the new language that was added was in one very small line of the code where it had previously said that noxious weeds were not allowed. And there were three words added to that I don't know if all council members saw.
I think
or
none
discussed.
Of them knew about it. There would have been some conversation about it.
But the three words were or edible plants.
So no noxious weeds or edible plants. It's just it's backwards thinking. It's totally backwards thinking. And I do think the council was taken off guard by it. I think nobody knew about it. Mm-hmm. I think the only reason we know about it now is because this one woman was cited for the crime of growing food.
And she asked for a hearing. She has not taken out the food producing area as directed. She asked for a hearing, which is coming up on August 19th. And what we submitted to her as a letter of support when she goes to this hearing, we as Birds and Bees Urban Farm, are one of our nonprofit missions is to encourage city code to be food friendly and for people to grow more food.
And in a lot of ways, the city of Des Moines code is very food friendly.
It is.
And it was food friendly, presumably, until this sneaky little thing was done back in July of last year. Hopefully we can fix it.
Well, it needs to be fixed. We would like to see, in the meantime, while the fairly newly formed Food Sustainability Advisory Committee is reviewing this issue, we would like to see any enforcement of that code halted until it can be straightened out, because the code reads ambiguously. The code says that you may not grow edible plants in the parking strip. However, in that same area of code, there is a list of 19 flowering plants that are allowed.
Some of them are edible.
And a lot of them are partially or completely edible.
And some of them are noxious and poisonous.
A couple of them
so
are poisonous, toxic.
It's just kind of silly. But, I think this is somebody looking for a fight. And I don't know what's behind it, really. We'll see. Well, hopefully we can fix it, and in a while we'll have good news when we come back to you about it.
In the meantime, this lady's getting a lot of support, and we're happy to be part of it.
Kathy, thanks for joining me. Mm-hmm. Thanks to our guest today, Dave Bujam, and to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dedeman, Charles Goldman, and Kathy Burns. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and Real Estate Agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, folks, your host for the Fallon Forum. Back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.